Good morning and welcome to the Roundtable panel, The Week in Review. I'm Sarah LaDuke, the producer of The Roundtable on WAMC. Each weekday morning, The Roundtable's Joe Donahue is joined by various experts, journalists, educators, and commentators to discuss current events. On Roundtable panel, The Week in Review, we feature selections from this week's shows. On Tuesday, July 9th, Joe was joined by Chief of Staff and Vice President for Strategy and Policy at Bard College, Malia Dumont, immigration attorney and partner with the Albany law firm of Whiteman, Osterman & Hanna, Sienna Freeman-Tolbert, The Empire Report's J.P. Miller, and former associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain.
This from the New York Times, that President Biden is leveraging his defiance to try to stem Democratic defections. And in private and in public, the president made clear he holds all the cards when determining his political future. And so then he still has Democratic critics. And the question is, can he get them to come over to his side? Some pretty stark, frank language yesterday from the president when he called Morning Joe, not this Joe, that other Joe, and talked to Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski and said, "I'm not going anywhere." And then said, "You want to run somebody else? Run them at the convention. Let's see. Come on, bring it on. Let's go." And that seems to be the new tactic from the president. This brings up two, I think, very interesting points. One is that it is obvious that the president has dug in his heels, that he has looked at polling, he has looked at support amongst other Democrats, and has said, "I'm in this." The other interesting thing is, why did it take 10 days? Why did it take so long for him to dig in? Why was he not doing this the day after the debate? And instead of the eerie quiet that came following that, why did this take so long? And so that's a question that's out there. And then there's a lot of other questions out there, like the doctor who came in 8 times, who is the Parkinson's expert. And there's many reasons for apparently there are many potential reasons for that. And that wasn't clearly explained at the press conference yesterday or at the press briefing, which got very heated. And so there's a lot going on, but let us talk about his emphatic declarations that he will not exit the presidential race, and sending this message to potential wayward Democrats: any criticisms going forward damage the party's chances against Donald Trump, because this is Joe Biden against the liberal elite. Sienna.
As I roll
by the way, that was a great eye roll. That was a good eye roll.
Joe Biden against... I'm just really of the opinion that, first, I did not agree when he announced his nomination in the beginning. I wanted him to pass the torch to someone else, but when he even announced. So I've been consistent on this. The debate just solidified it for me. However, I understand how big of an election this is. And so, to me, it's not Joe Biden versus Trump. To me, it's Trump versus democracy. And so, for those reasons, I can, you know, boister myself up, you know, push, get out there and say, let's vote for Biden. I know what we need to do. However, I feel like when we just talk about Joe Biden as our nominee, there's a lot, in my opinion, there's a lot of ego there to think that he's the only person that could beat Donald Trump, because I do believe that is Trump versus democracy. He did a great job these last 4 years. He's overseeing like 2 wars. I get it, but it's concerning to me. And I don't think it's unfair for people to be concerned. That's all I'm saying.
JP.
I think we're at a really unique moment. We are witnessing history right now. We witnessed history at that debate. And I believe that that debate performance is what in many ways will define President Biden's legacy and what people will remember about him. And that debate date being 7 weeks before the convention was designed, in my belief, by people inside the White House to give him the opportunity to have an off-ramp to exit the race. There is no other explanation why you would put up a declining president 7 weeks before the convention to have a debate performance like that. My belief is that there are people within the White House that are patriots, that really care about this country and care about Joe Biden. They've seen episodes like this over the last 6 months to a year and know that he is in significant decline. And so they put him up for that debate 7 weeks ahead of the convention to allow for an off-ramp. And I think that he is likely to step aside. I believe Joe Biden is a good man. He has shown that he has made good decisions over his lifetime, decisions that are in the best interest of the country. This is not an easy decision to make. And so I think within the next week to 10 days, you will likely see Joe Biden step aside.
I want to get to everybody else, but don't you think I thought that, too. I thought exactly how you think. But I think in the last maybe 36 hours, my thinking hasn't changed. But when we talk about the practicality of it, I think that if he's going to do it, there should have been like some little tiny, you use the word off ramp, but some little tiny thing that he kept a crack open to give himself an out. And he doesn't, I mean, this is ironclad, and I find that to be interesting.
It's not ironclad. It's going to be the top story that everybody's talking about until the convention. He's going to have a press conference at NATO. He had a performance on Morning Joe yesterday and a performance with George Stephanopoulos on Friday that didn't watch that and say, oh, that's a different Joe Biden than I saw at the debate. No, that's the same Joe Biden you saw at the debate. You're going to see the same Joe Biden at the press conference. And there's a good possibility that the Joe Biden you see at the press conference could possibly be worse than what you saw on Morning Joe and on Stephanopoulos and at the debate. So this story is not going away. The White House press corps has really awakened. And you see, wow, you see a press that is actually questioning Corinne Jean-Pierre and spent the entire hour yesterday. I watched the press conference, the entire hour on one topic, which is the number of times that the Parkinson's doctors have been to the White House. So just because Joe Biden says he wants this to go away doesn't mean that it's going to go away. This is going to continue to be the top story until he steps aside.
Malia.
So this is one reason. I mean, I really can't stand presidential campaign politics. I never liked them. I try to, I don't typically watch the debates. I don't find most presidential campaign politics to be at all indicative of how someone will actually proceed in office. Right? Campaigns are different from governing. And we've seen that over and over and over again. And yeah, he had a terrible performance in the debate. The immediate hysteria that followed from that, as if a debate performance somehow translates directly into how he's going to govern or how he has been governing, driven by pundits, driven by the 24-hour news cycle, I think that was unnecessary and a little bit unfair. Now, since then, you're right, Joe, he didn't respond quickly enough to that. So he should be able to manage the party and manage the situation.
The thing that I keep struggling with, and I'm interested, just to tag on what you're saying, and I apologize for interrupting, but because he didn't act within the 7 to 10 days, I thought, well, he's not able to. Like, he would if he could.
That's not what I thought.
Okay.
I thought that nobody except, the majority leader of the Senate is not calling for him to step down. Like, people who are the major pillars of the party are not calling for him to step down.
Well, I don't think Mr. Freeze would, but okay.
So I think misjudged how long I think it's loud, it's vocal, but fringe elements of the party and far left journalists are the ones who are calling for him to step. That's what I think, and most people are concerned about him, but this whole story about the neurologist is totally blown out of proportion and is inaccurate as well. I mean, we just saw a story a couple months ago about how the Donald Trump White House drastically misused White House doctors and had them treating all kinds of people. And but that's always been the case. The doctors who come to the White House don't only treat the president. And I think they came out with a statement that the neurologist has been there, yes, every month to treat all the other people there. And Biden has only seen him once. Now, maybe that's a complete lie, but I don't think that his people set him up to be humiliated at the debate in the hopes that he would like have some kind of off ramp. That just that to me, it feels like a conspiracy theory. Kind of like clearly he didn't do as well as anyone hoped or wanted. But that wouldn't be the way that you want a president to hand the baton to someone else if that's what they were setting him up for. I mean, there doesn't seem to be any preparation around that. And all the people who are calling for him to step down, I don't see, like, who are they putting forward? What is the actual solution here? I don't hear actual solutions from people who are calling on him to step aside.
Mike Spain.
Well, if President Biden had intended to only do one term, and there is ample evidence that that was the message being communicated 4 years ago. I'll be a transitional president. I'll restore norms, and that will be my role. If that was his intention all along, it would have been difficult because he would have been a lame duck president out of the gate. And in order for him to be effective as a president, and I think he has been, and successful as a president, as I think he has been, he would need to campaign and behave in a way that he was going to seek another term, and then late in the game switch gears, if that was a strategy. Maybe that explains why there's such reticence about doing it under these circumstances. I don't know. But to approach your point, Joe, about the 10 days of silence, let's say, do you think it's possible that, and there was a holiday weekend involved and, you know, the Camp David and the family, yada, 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 that there was any real thoughtful consideration by Biden and the people closest to him on whether stepping down or stepping out of the, giving up the candidacy and stepping aside for reelection was really seriously considered? Or was it a crisis period where they were thinking about the best strategy to survive and stay the candidate and win the race? And I don't know the answer to that, but based on the last 36 hours, as you say, Joe, it looks like whatever the pros and cons were, somebody has convinced him or at least affirmed for him if Biden believed he could do it and said, go ahead and do it. You've beat the odds before, Uncle Joe or Dad or whatever, Grandpa, and go ahead and go out and show them all off. And it seems like that is what they're doing now. They're trying to make the best out of a real big mess and keep Joe on top of the ticket.
All right. Anybody have any comments on what other panelists said that they would like to get into?
Oh, I mean, I can just reiterate what I said. I think the issue with the debate was that it was very hard to watch. And it wasn't just him performing poorly at a debate. Obama performed poorly at his first debate. It was that he seemed like he was not as well as he could be. I mean, as someone with an elderly parent, I understand what that looks like. And I understand how stubborn sometimes people can be when their life is changing and their memory is going away. And that's frustrating for them. And sometimes the way he sounded on Morning Joe and on some, it sounded like, it reminded me of that, like, obstinate, kind of stubborn, like, no, I'm not changing. I can do this. We know you can. You did. But are you the best solution? That's my concern.
The other thing about so we've been hearing during that 10 days about how he would be doing more off-the-cuff events, he would be doing more interviews, he'd be doing, and one of the things that struck me about the, and feel free to tell me I'm being petty, but one of the things that struck me about that appearance on Morning Joe is that he was obviously reading, number one. And number two, he kept on saying, well, it says here on the paper that I did this, 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 and this. Well, to me, that's really no different than a teleprompter, because it's radio and you can't hear
it.
I mean,
yeah.
Look, ladies and gentlemen, we're all on a teleprompter. But it's
can you back that up a little bit?
That's right. Exactly. JP's showing his script. No, I just think so. It isn't, and I don't know. Here's my question to the panel. Without any agenda whatsoever, which is simply, okay, so you're Joe Biden, you're digging in your heels, we're in, we're going, a decision has been made, full steam ahead. Let's just say 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 8 weeks, there's another blip.
Could be this afternoon and after the NATO press conference.
Correct. And then what? I mean, at least if it happens this afternoon, you still have the time.
Yeah, you do have time, yeah.
But after that, anything after the convention, you don't. And then what do you do?
And that's what I think is happening right now. I don't think that leadership is coming out and having these large conference, saying out loud that I don't support Joe Biden. They're all supporting Joe Biden because they know the right way to do this is private conversations. And that's the right way to do it, to honor his legacy. And I think that's why we're not hearing from everyone saying, no, we don't support Joe Biden. Yes, we support him. And they're working behind the scenes to see what the best solution is for the party. Because everyone knows.
For the country.
For the country.
Right. I think, so in case anyone is mistaking my point of view on this, it's not that I'm like 100% Biden has to stay in. No, I'm focused on the election. Who is most likely to win the election and be a good president? Now, there are a lot of elements of the Democratic Party that are questioning Biden's ability, but the Democrats had their best hour of grassroots fundraising in the entire campaign the last hour of the debate. Like, it actually energized people who wanted to support Biden. Now, I haven't seen a lot of polls in the past couple weeks about the past 10 days, but like how, I mean, there are elements of the Democratic Party that are calling on Biden to leave, but even a doddering Biden would be better than Trump, right? I think a lot of us would agree he would be less. I mean, I wouldn't like that as you know, I don't want someone who's not capable as my commander in chief, but I am more comfortable with that than someone who is actively destructive of our democratic system.
But so right. So you could run a soup can against Trump and probably get 35% of the vote.
Right. Yes. And I feel like what my question is, Biden, he's I still feel like he's more likely to capture a big chunk of the voting block than someone who is less tested than he is, who's going to come out of nowhere. Who hasn't been prepared for this role, who hasn't been in the spotlight in the same way. I just don't see Kamala Harris like
well,
capturing.
I disagree. With
I disagree. Kamala's looking. She's looking good.
I would also encourage you to go back and watch the Vice President Harris versus Vice President Pence debate from 4 years ago. Vice President Harris did a phenomenal job against Pence, and Pence did a really good job too. She has full command of all of the issues. She's been in the seat of the vice president. She also ran for president herself, so she is ready. And she is going to, I'm not saying she can beat Trump, but she will certainly, in my view, will do a much better job than Biden.
I don't think she has the same. I mean, I would love to see her. That would be amazing, right? But I don't think that she, even despite everything that's happened, that she is in the position to do as well in the election as even a less capable Biden.
Malia Dumont on the Roundtable panel on Tuesday, July 9th. We'll be back with more of the Roundtable panel, The Week in Review, after this. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel, The Week in Review. On Thursday, 7/11, Joe Donahue was joined for the panel discussion by public policy and communications expert Teresa Bourgeois, attorney and former New York 19 Congressman John Faso, and vice president for editorial development at the New York Press Association, Judy Patrick.
Most Democrats want Biden to drop out, but the overall race is static, according to the latest polls. Democrats say defections from Biden are likely to increase in the coming days. They certainly increased yesterday. So just from my vantage point, it seemed like Monday there was the full court press. And Tuesday, people seemed almost resigned to the fact that Biden was going to stay in the race. And then Nancy Pelosi went on Morning Joe. The most notable, and perhaps not for the right reasons, but the most notable being George Clooney, who is a mega donor for the president and for the Democratic Party, who came out yesterday in a letter to the New York Times and said that it's time for Joe Biden to exit the race. I think the most stunning line in that was that the Joe Biden that I saw 3 weeks ago at this event that I hosted, speaking in the voice of George Clooney, said, this is not the guy that I knew 4 years ago. This is not the guy I knew 2 years ago. Unfortunately, this was the guy who was at the debate on 2 weeks ago. So I thought that was a withering line. And he went on and actually had kind of proposed a plan. And so there's that. But hey, what does a Hollywood actor know? Then Peter Welch from Vermont came out, Democratic senator from Vermont, came out and said that that Biden should leave the race. Chris Murphy, who 2 days ago said, we're with the president, and then said, we're with the president, but we really think we need to rethink this. And I'm hoping that there is a group coming together to have a discussion with the president over the coming days. All of this, these discussions about weighing Biden's fitness to run comes as he is going to be giving a news conference tonight, and it is going to loom large. I think it's impossible for it not to. Now we don't know a lot about the news conference. We don't know. We know that it's going to follow NATO. I think we know what most of the questions are going to be, but we don't know how many. We don't know for how long. We don't know how it will be ultimately structured. So there is that. I will say, however, and Judy, I'd be interested in your thoughts on this, but given the tenor of the press briefings over the last several days, I can only imagine that this is going to be a feast.
Well, and we're hearing this described as a big boy news conference. How dismissive is that?
Who came up with that description? That was from the White House, right?
John Kirby.
John Kirby said that?
Yeah, in response to someone who else had used that reference. I'm not sure who did that, but it was John Kirby had repeated it.
Right, in the effect that he hasn't really had full-throated news conferences in a long, long, long time. Yeah, this is going to be an important moment for the president. And there are a lot of questions what you saw in that very contentious White House briefing the other day was a very frustrated press corps because many of them feel like they've been misled by the White House for the last 6 months to a year about the president's health or is the president's ability to articulate his position. This press briefing or this press conference, I mean, who else is going to be answering questions? How many questions are going to be asked? And how the president performs. I know you talked about performance the other day on the roundtable about you don't like the idea that it is considered a performance. But being able to communicate effectively where you're coming from and your thought process is an important part of being the president of the United States. And how he answers the questions tonight. I think it's a do or die moment for him. Although, to be quite honest, I mean, I can't get past the debate performance, and then I can't get to pass the Stephanopoulos interview, and then I can't get past the Morning Joe conversation. I mean, all of those clearly show the president has a hard time completing a thought. I mean, the Democrats have to get their heads out of the sand on this one, because it's showing that they are inept at detail or pinpointing a problem. They have a real problem. They're going to lose, and Trump is going to win by a landslide, which is going to give him a mandate to do all sorts of horrible things. Let's be clear about that.
So do you hold Trump to the same standard? You don't seem to be, because certainly him in a press conference answering questions can't hold a continuous thought. Let me ask it differently. Why don't you hold Trump to that same standard?
Oh, Trump's been held to a pretty high standard in terms of for the last five or six years. And the fact going to hold the president? Are you saying Joe Biden's should be held to the same?
I'm talking about Trump. I'm asking about Trump and his performance at the debate.
The press conference tonight involves Joe Biden.
Well, but you said press conferences. To be president, you have to be able to answer questions thoroughly, thoughtfully, clearly.
Trump had the second...
Can Trump answer questions thoroughly, thoughtfully, clearly?
I would consider that Trump had the second worst debate performance in history, but Joe Biden had the worst debate performance in history. So I'm going with the number one to focus on. And, in fact, the fact that he's president of the United States makes it more important for us to focus on.
The current president of the United States. Right.
The current president of the United States. That's why. I mean, Trump had a terrible debate performance. It's true. And it was noted in press coverage.
But barely. Hardly at all.
Oh, but Teresa, I don't.
No, I'm not going to let go on this because I do agree that Biden had it was deeply disturbing, right?
Okay.
But there is no equivalency here. And anyway, we'll go on. Sorry.
Well, I think that the President Biden for not, or excuse me, President Trump, Donald Trump, 45th president of the United States, has been for 9 years. We've been talking about nothing on this show, but every horrible thing that he has done. And I think ad nauseum, and people write to us regularly and say, don't you have anything else to talk about? So we look at this performance by the current president of the United States. You have major Democratic donors, you're with a threat to lose the House, a threat to lose the Senate. You have Nancy Pelosi getting involved. Apparently, you now have Chuck Schumer getting involved. I don't think you can just not talk about what's happening on the Democratic side and talk about...
No. I'm not saying don't talk about it. And, I mean, I said what I thought last week, which I think he is going to step aside. I think first of all, there were steps that have to be taken. Second of all, he is not in advance of or during a NATO summit that the U.S. and the White House is hosting, going to announce that he's stepping aside. It was never going to happen. That wasn't going to happen. It's not going to happen because he has spent years, the last 4 years, rebuilding the mess that the Trump administration made out of NATO, and he's done it in a very good way. It's not going to happen because he understands that the U.S. is on a global stage and the timing wasn't right, and all the people around him who know that. I mean, I thought it was unseemly for Warner to say what he said when he said it. But it wasn't going to happen during a NATO summit or in advance of a NATO summit. Can you imagine if they had said that before the NATO summit was over?
But listen
to Pelosi very carefully. She is signaling, as is Schumer signaling. I think that there is not much time, but there's also stuff in the background that has to happen. They're in until they're not in. He's got to be all in until he's not in. But you don't step aside in the middle of a NATO summit that you're hosting.
John.
Well, I'm not sure what more there is to say. I think two points I'd like to make. One, picking up a little bit on what Teresa just said, as an American looking at our standing in the world, et cetera, I think it would have been better for Democrats to hold their fire while the president is having a international conference with our important allies. I think
exactly
it's
right.
It's a little bit unseemly. Everyone knows what's going on. So I wish that that had happened. I think they would have been smarter. And I think most of them have kind of held their fire, but a couple have come out. Peter Welsh, who I'm very friendly with and respect a great deal, you know, he said what a lot of them are thinking. Number two, the second point I'd like to make is that Joe Biden's deterioration, and I'll call it that, has been visible for many, many months, if not the last year and a half in particular. I know, for instance, a former colleague of mine who related to me last year that he had gone in to meet with the president one-on-one about some issues. The president only spoke from cards. He said, this was not the man I had a similar meeting with a few years before. It was very obvious to him that he's not up to the task. And I think the Democrats are in a political box because they have a nominee who won the nomination. No one really stepped forward except for Congressman Phillips to challenge him. And everyone said, shut up. Don't say anything about it. And now they're left, and the press corps, frankly, I think has been somewhat complicit in covering up the deficiencies of the president. And I think I say this mournfully, really, because we're all Americans. And this really, I believe that the president should not run for re-election. But that's going to be up to him ultimately, because he has got to make a decision to step aside. And maybe Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries and Pelosi could bring the pressure on him to do that. Right now, I think it's no more than a 50-50 proposition that he will step aside.
Well, that's what I think, and a lot of people are reacting to, Teresa, is that it just the signals are from the Biden campaign and from the president himself and those around him very closely. I understand your point of he's in until he's not. But
you have to be, particularly in advance of the summit. You have to be.
But I also agree with John that there's and right now it still seems like there's a 50-50 shot of whether he's actually going to take the advice of those around him and those who are circling the wagons to say it's time to get out.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I don't know if he's going to get it out or not. I mean, it just seems to me that this is where it's headed. And but that, you know, there was a lot riding on this summit in terms of the global reorganization and listen to a lot of what they talk about. I mean, I listen to the BBC's coverage, was much different. The U.S., not a lot of coverage of it. But it's, you know, we're at a very crucial point with the realignment of Russia and China. And you saw India, you know, Modi in
Moscow
and the big hug that went on there. There's a lot going on in terms of a global realignment. And it's going to require people with a very steady hand and a lot of knowledge. And it's going to require, I mean, I think that they are guarding against the possibility of a Trump, you know, a Trump victory, that the NATO alliance needs to realign itself and essentially brace itself or prepare itself in case that happens, because we know what Trump thinks of NATO, which is he even said, I didn't even know what NATO was. But for him, it's all transactional. And this is a very, very complicated chess game that needs to be played globally. And so I think, you know, I think the folks here were wide-eyed. I don't know if you agree with me, John, but a lot of the conversation you had that was had in around the margins of the summit is how do you brace for what may happen if Trump does win? But I think that this shift, which I think inevitably, and I again, listen to Nancy Pelosi. She's the best vote counter there is. And listen to what she's talking, what she's saying, and how she's saying it, and listen to Schumer. I think that there will be a visit sometime soon. And I could be wrong, but I think that now the other question is, what then is the ticket? I think that they've also had Harris. There's been a lot more focus on Harris. I don't know that she's been out more, but I think the media is covering her differently in the last week. But she's certainly been out and about. Will it be her? Will she stay as vice president and there's a different presidential candidate? I don't know. It all has to happen pretty quickly. There's a lot of issues around what happens with delegates. There's serious timing issues. And then there's also a lot of issues around the enormous amounts of money that's been raised, but you already see that the money's shifting into different pots that are more flexible that a different ticket could use. So
the two main candidates for us to vote for in November, as of this moment, Joe Biden and Donald Trump. And while this isn't the most important thing, the New York Times editorial board has said that either one of them are fit to lead.
Well, I agree with that. And John, I don't know if you agree with me or not, but I do see, separate from his policies, I see a big difference in Trump. And I see a big difference cognitively in how he's been acting at rallies. I try to watch all the rallies. Sometimes I watch them more than once because I'm so fascinated by what's all going on here. It's very painful to do. But last week,
do it for the show, and we thank you for that.
but seriously, separate from his policies. Like in the last couple of months, he can't seem to read or grasp a teleprompter. And the first time I noticed it, it was an outside event where I know it can be windy and then they could move a bit and it's hard to read. But he gets all confused and then he starts complaining and he's not going to pay the people who put the teleprompter, who set it up. But there's been maybe 3-4 indoor events where he can't read the teleprompter. He gets all confused about what's on the teleprompter and he talks and talks about how he can't read the teleprompter. And then he starts repeating stories. And then when he gets even more lost, he pulls out the snake story, which he reads from a piece of paper. It seems like when he starts to lose it. So so much so that the Fox has started not covering his speeches live because they've had to cut away a couple times because the stuff he's saying is so disjointed. And I find besides his policies, besides 2025, Project 2025, which everybody, I gave the assignment last week for people to, for the weekend reading, to look at Project 2025. But besides it, maybe a disagreement on policy, I just wonder about the cognitive slide that I see in him too. I mean, I find it. Do you notice a difference? Jeff?
Well, I think President Trump has a history of not speaking in complete sentences. A lot of it is a run-on paragraph if you follow it. And I've watched some of those, what you're talking about, Teresa. I don't detect much difference from the way he was previously. And I think the important point is that if you look at surveys, and most people are never going to watch a whole rally. I mean, I certainly don't. I turned off the debate 15 minutes into it because I couldn't stand it. I was just really mortified as an American watching it. So I read a lot of subsequent coverage and saw some clips afterwards. But I think that if you look at surveys, you find that...
You're like Joe Biden. You didn't watch it either.
Yeah.
But if you had, I think you'd be interested in Trump's inability to answer the questions.
No, I'm familiar with that. And he does ramble. There's no doubt about it. But I think I don't detect that that's much different from how he's been since 15. But on the other hand, when voters are asked these questions as to who could serve for 4 years, by a wide margin, more people say Trump is more vigorous, more together, and he's presents a more vigorous, a healthier approach, regardless of all the Big Macs he's had all through the years, than does President Biden, who is showing obvious signs of aging, which unfortunately happens to all of us, but some it happens to more dramatically, and when you're in the public eye like this. So I think on the issue of whether or not who's more physically capable of handling the presidency, polling suggests very, very strongly that most people see Trump as more vigorous and capable of doing that, regardless of one whether you agree with policies, than President Biden. And this is the fix that we're in. And you know, Joe, a year ago, people were saying 70% of the public wanted a different candidate than both of these guys.
Right.
And now we're going to have both of these guys, it looks like. And if the Democrats, if they are able to persuade the president to step aside at the convention, release his delegates, I think they inevitably will have to go with Vice President Harris. I think for political reasons and identity politics reasons in the Democratic Party, I don't see any alternative that they have. So it's going to be, if he does back out and we have an open convention, it will be the most watched television event probably since anything relating to Taylor Swift.
Well, I think the the open convention, I think when there, if and when there is a shift, yeah, right, where he says, I'm going to step aside, I think it has to be carefully orchestrated, which is not always what Democrats do, but I think it needs to be carefully orchestrated. That's plain and mildly. I know, Joe. I can't even say it with a straight face, but I just can keep hoping. I think it has to be carefully orchestrated and in a way that it's clear that Biden is doing the handoff.
Teresa Bourgeois on the Roundtable panel on July 11th. We'll be back with the final segment of this week's show after this break. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel, The Week in Review. On Friday, July 12th, Joe Donahue was out for the day and David Gustina filled in as host. He was joined by former EPA regional administrator, president of Beyond Plastics, and faculty member at Bennington College, Judith Ank, Ulster County Comptroller and the former president and CEO of the Community Foundations of the Hudson Valley, March Gallagher, and CEO of the Business Council of New York State, Heather Mulligan.
Why don't we start with you, Judith? What's your reaction to what happened? We've seen some more people call for him to step down. We've seen others sort of bolster and say, hey, he's showing he has a big command of foreign policy, at least. What do you make of it?
Well, I think the president was exceptional in terms of his command of foreign policy, and it's a reminder that he is very experienced on the foreign stage. So that was a comfortable setting for him in front of NATO. I can't quite imagine Donald Trump standing in front of all these international leaders. That said, we all were holding our breath through the entire hour. I do want to point out that, and I didn't point this out, Kelly O'Donnell, the head of the White House Correspondents Association, pointed out that this was President Biden's first standalone news conference with the White House press corps in a year. In a year. Oh, my goodness. It is such a reminder that the Biden senior staff were shielding him from the press and from the public. We now know why. So that was unfortunate. BBC this morning, you know, led with the two gaffes, and they were significant. I feel bad for, President Biden was introducing President Zelensky from Ukraine and refer to him as Vladimir Putin. Imagine how the president of Ukraine, I mean, that guy's having such a challenging time.
Yeah, if you're going to flub, you know, that's the least one possible.
He corrected himself.
Yes. Yeah. It took a few seconds, but it was like, oh, that's debate Biden. I think it doesn't move the needle either way. It was similar to the ABC interview with George Stephanopoulos. But this campaign cannot be about us holding our breaths for the next 4 months. I remember the Obama campaign where you were inspired, and it was much watched TV on Tuesday nights, watching the primary results and then watching his speeches during the general election. We are so far from that. And I think, you know, everyone saw what they saw last night. If you believe Biden should stay in the race, you got some confirmation there. If you thought the gaffes were significant, you got some confirmation there. There's definitely a lot of confirmation bias going on. And in listening to the commentators afterwards, one of them made such a good point. Immediately after the debate performance, those of us who believe that Biden needs to drop out, and we can get into why I think that, we were all scolded immediately that you should not be challenging whether the president stays in or not and trying to kind of stifle people sharing their concerns. You don't do that with Democrats. By definition, Democrats fight all the time about everything. And that's what leads to better decision making. I think that's why primaries are good. You vet candidates, you hear about positions. And then the final point is all of this discussion of whether Biden is capable or not means we're not talking about climate change. We're not talking about housing. We're not talking about health care. We're not talking about how kids who just got out of college are just so burdened with debt. And I think there's an obligation to push this presidential campaign back to discussing some issues as opposed to who dislikes Trump more and who dislikes Biden more.
March.
I agree with Judith completely. I do not think this changed the needle. I think people who were supportive of him remaining in the race could take away, and people who were concerned, like I am, could take away what they needed to. It is actually his fourth solo press conference during his term. That compares to 18 by Obama at this stage in his presidency and 13 by Bush in his presidency, but only 2 by Donald Trump during his presidency. So I think we're seeing a change in the way presidents are made available to the public and are speaking in an unscripted way. And in part, that is because, you know, we have some competency issues that staff is concerned about. I think the debate really showed for Democrats how the rallying cries on the right and in the conservative arc that Biden may have a fitness issue came as a huge surprise to people. And I know, like for me, at my kitchen table, I've been arguing with my husband for months. He had been making these points. I was disregarding them. And the debate really set things alight for me that I had to kind of face facts that Biden is 81. You know, he's the age of my father. And we're talking about him serving another 4 years after the close of 2024. And really, that brings me to the place where I say, no matter what we do in this election, if we elect a Biden-Harris ticket, we are saying that Kamala Harris could be the next president and is likely to be the next president during this coming term. My feeling is it would legitimize her candidacy, her leadership, if we bite the bullet and do it now. And I also want to say I see these congressional leaders and other leaders like the lieutenant governor coming out and speaking their minds. You know, my congressman, Congressman Pat Ryan. I want people to know that is an incredibly challenging and difficult thing for those elected leaders to do. I said it the day after the debate that I thought we should have an open convention, and I got absolutely hammered in my personal messages. But I felt like I'm not up for election. You know, I have the opportunity to speak my mind. People like me need to do it. They know they're taking a huge risk. And none of those elected Democrats in the House who are speaking out want to be on the opposite side of the next president of the United States. So they have made a judgment. And they believe that no matter what, President Biden will not be in service come 2025. And I think that's a really, really serious position that people are taking. They know they're taking a huge risk, and they're doing it because they think it's important for the health of the country.
What do you think, listeners? Panel at WAMC.org. We just heard from Judith and March, and now Heather.
Hi.
You're the last, but you're not late.
No, I was on time. No, so a couple things I wanted to add, and I generally agree with Judith and March. And I think first, I think he did well at the first part of the press conference, but he was reading off of a teleprompter, right? And he can really stay smooth and presidential when he's reading off a teleprompter. When he went to the Q&A part, much choppier. You know, you really... Now, he did a lot better than he did at the debate, but gosh, don't I wish that they had focused on foreign policy at the debate, because this is his strong suit, right? This is where he's got the experience. And I mean, if you were to do a side by side on some of these questions between him and Trump, you would really see pretty stark differences. But that's a missed opportunity that, you know, it maybe if he does stay on the ticket and they have another debate, maybe they'll do some foreign policy stuff, because I know Trump would say, oh yeah, I'm really good on foreign policy. I'm best friends with Vladimir Putin. I get along with Xi, you know, so.
And Viktor Orban.
Right. But the other big miss, I think, is, you know, if he really was concerned not about his presidency as much as the future of the country, he would have done a lot more to boost up Kamala Harris. And he didn't. He didn't at all. In fact, he did almost the opposite. A few times, you know, he was asked a direct question about, you know, would you kind of be okay? And his answer was like, that's not going to happen. You know, and the first time, the first gaffe in the questions related to her, he was asked, do you think she's qualified to be president? And he started off saying she was selected as VP. And then he said Donald Trump or Vice President Trump. Mm-hmm. And then he quickly kind of reversed course and said, and he's clearly not qualified. So it was kind of a missed opportunity, but B, also a gaffe. I know we're all looking for the gaffes now because of, you know, the concerns about his acuity. I don't think he did anything to alleviate those concerns in particular. I know, you know, personally that let's just put it out there, assuming that this maybe is early stage Parkinson's or Parkinson's, one of the hallmarks is, you know, sort of not being able to focus when asked questions, but having really good days and bad days, depending on whether or not you have a fever or, you know, if you have a fever, you can become very disoriented with Parkinson's. I'm not saying that he has it, but I'm saying, you know, there is something to be concerned about when you have this vast difference between two performances that are relatively close in time. And I guess my third thing that I would say is, and it has nothing to do with the presentation last night, but somewhere in the last few days, Donald Trump basically said something along the lines like, well, I think Biden should stay in. Well, I think that's all we need to know, right?
Yeah, right. Trump and his people were praising Biden's performance last
sarcastically.
Night.
Sarcastically.
Yeah, well, they really want him to stay in because they're reading the same polls that others are, that in swing states, Trump beats Biden.
And that's where he needs to.
And it has been consistent. This is not new. Pre-debate, Biden was behind Trump in swing states, and it's only getting worse.
But you know the administration is going to use the latest NPR PBS Marist College poll that finds Biden leading 50-48% among registered voters nationally. Yes, not the
Doesn't
swing
matter.
States. Slight improvement from last month's deadlock. But you can see him, you know, he's grinding his feet in. He's holding on as hard as he can. He's not budging. And they're going to use this poll as an example of why he shouldn't.
Right. And national polls do not matter. There was an article in Politico a few days ago that New York may be becoming a swing state.
That's right.
What I find inconsistent is, and he was asked about it last night, you know, first of all, you know, people are always asking about polls, and he's saying that polls are not always accurate. That is true. But these are consistent polls, pre-debate, swing voters, independents in swing states saying he is too old. People have seen this. Voters are ahead of where members of Congress are. So the president last night is saying the polls are wrong. And then when really pressed at the end, who's going to convince you to get out? He said the only person who would convince him is his pollster, who will show him numbers that he can't beat Trump and that someone else has a better shot at being Trump.
Right. Not even that Kamala Harris could do better. He won't step back if the polls show she could do better than him. He needs to see that he is slated to lose. I want to go back to something Heather was talking about the administration really not shining a light on Kamala Harris's abilities and using her in a strategic way over the last 3.5 years. He did note last night her forceful role in rallying the country on reproductive rights and that she's a heck of a prosecutor. It made me wonder how many presidents have been prosecutors, by the way. Two. two presidents, mm-hmm. Polk and McKinley, have been prosecutors. So I think that's a rare trait.
I forgot about Polk.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there are a lot of people who are concerned about that. You have a lot of people on the Democratic side who are nervous about having a prosecutor there. But in this case, given the candidate on the other side, it might be very useful to have a prosecutor debating Trump and being out in the field speaking about the issues that we have. And let me also say, Biden spoke about his, success in getting major legislation done, and that has been really tremendous. I mean, just an amazing swath of legislation over the term of his presidency, including, healthcare issues like lowering the prices of insulin, 15 million new jobs, bringing manufacturing back, the infrastructure bill, forgiving debt, expanding NATO. Those are all amazing strategic things that have happened during his presidency, including his work on Capitol Hill. And, Kamala Harris doesn't have that experience, but she has other experience that I think is not being highlighted.
She's also a woman. And in that debate, when they asked him about abortion, he trailed off and ended with the immigration. I mean, there was a softball of all softballs that would have been knocked out of the park by Kamala Harris.
And the climate change question.
No question.
When asked about climate change, the only thing Biden needed to say, one thing, and he could have remembered this without notes. Donald Trump told the fossil fuel executives, give me $1 billion, I'll do whatever you want on climate change. And he didn't even bring it up.
And Barbara Lombardo, who's a former editor, publisher, the editor of the Saratogian, said, my dander's up here. Because if there's one person that's truly unfit, it's former President Donald Trump. And we're using energy, this vim and vigor that he has as a test of fitness, when in the end, as our former CEO used to say, he's a lying, 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 lying liar. And any plans that he has, or let's just talk about some of those plans for a moment, like we know what they're planning to do if he gets into office. What is it called? 2020?
Project
2025.
Heritage Foundation.
This really isn't a question of whose character and integrity is the best. It's really all about a person's age.
But we knew that Trump was not with it, that his positions are horrible, that he consistently lies. He's a pathological liar. Mm-hmm. We knew that. And so what happens now, we have this dynamic where it's drip, drip, drip on Biden, and we're not getting to talk about Trump. And, the headline this morning is, Biden didn't completely screw up the news conference, but it really should be about Trump welcoming Viktor Orban, the dreadful president of Hungary, to Mar-a-Lago. I mean, how disrespectful. The NATO leaders are in Washington, D.C., and he's doing like a little alternative viewing out of Florida. But see, this is what's going to happen if Biden stays in, and I don't blame the press for this because I think they feel duped like we feel duped. It's going to be almost, a death watch looking for the next Biden mistake. And there will be many more, and they will be close to the November election. And it takes attention away from how negative Donald, that's the nicest way I could say this, how negative Donald Trump will be in his unleashed second term.
Judith Enck on the Roundtable panel on Friday, July 12th. Full episodes of the Roundtable panel are posted online at WAMC.org and are also available in the WAMC app or via podcast. This has been the Roundtable panel, The Week in Review. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Thank you for listening.